Welcome to What in the Smut podcast.
Where the books are horny and so are we. I'm Elle.
And I'm Kay. So what do we got going on in the first Smutverse of 2026?
We're starting the year off with good news only.
Love that.
2025 was a goddamn dumpster fire and I'm not bringing that energy into 2026 just yet. So let's talk about Stephen Fry and the Hay Festival. The UK has been seeing a depressing decline in literacy rates, and they're not going to sit by and do nothing. First, the Education Secretary announced the National Year of Reading 2026, coupled with an inquiry into why there's such a sharp decline in reading among children and adults. But the UK recognized that it couldn't just be a government mission. They needed help. Enter Stephen Fry. Among other things, he is the president of the Hay Festival, an annual literature and arts festival held in Hay-on-Wye, Wales, and he is very familiar with the power of a good book. Side note, Hay-on-Wye is like a book town. That's like its whole shtick. There's like a bookstore every block, and every year they have this massive festival about reading and the arts, and I've been wanting to go since I discovered it like 10 years ago.
That gave me goosebumps. Like, I want to go.
Yeah.
So, that's incredible.
Maybe that's on the docket for 2026. They are launching a new campaign to get recommendations for your, yes, your favorite books to entice more people to read for pleasure. The Pleasure List campaign opened up in December, and readers can submit their favorite reads for a chance to win a bundle of books for a public space of their choice. Fewer and fewer people in Britain are reading for pleasure, said Fry, and we want to change that. So we'll have a link in our description where you can submit your most unputdownable reads until May.
I love that. I love that so much. I feel like people in the U.S. are reading more for pleasure because they're trying to just escape the hellscape that we live in. So there's that. But I love that they're trying to preemptively get happy people to read books.
Yes. Now, our book this week was certainly something, but I don't know if it's making my list of most enticing book recommendations for the UK. Okay.
So this week we read Space Vampire by Ruby Dixon. And this is the same author of Ice Planet Barbarians, which we read and loved.
Mm-hmm.
The synopsis says, in a universe full of heartless aliens, an abandoned human and a vampire clone discover an unexpected connection in this delightfully bite-sized short story by New York Times bestselling author Ruby Dixon. Dana, the overlooked human pet of an alien scientist, and Vlad, a genetically engineered vampire with a taste for more than just blood, find themselves unexpectedly alone on a deserted space station. As they plot their escape, they'll have to navigate cramped quarters, steamy encounters, and the growing realization that they might be each other's perfect match. But with their captors in hot pursuit, will their budding romance survive the vast emptiness of space? This was part of
collection. I saw Allie Hazelwood was in there.
Yes. So
it was
this
kind of star-studded.
It was, and it also was like a different, a wide range of authors, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the reviews really kind of showed that.
I see.
Because people read the whole collection, and this was kind of on the outskirts, I think, of what the majority of those authors write.
I see. Well, it's firmly within Ruby Dixon's wheelhouse.
Absolutely. 100%. So where would you put this one on the smut scale?
I'm going to go, I think, with level 3.
Interesting. Okay.
Only because I think of biting as a particularly rare kink.
Even when it's a vampire?
Yeah. Even when it's a vampire.
Okay.
I don't know. It feels like a level 3. I could be argued down to a level 2.
Is it
it's lightly kink?
The biting to draw blood? Is that the part? Because I'm kind of a biter. Not to draw blood, but like,
yeah, I think it's the drawing blood part that I think is.
See,
it pushes it over the edge for me.
That didn't even strike me as a kink because it's part of the monster. Like it's quite literally like one of the three things that identifies a vampire as a vampire.
You know, you make a good point. I'm happy to be talked down to a level two.
I think it's more two. The biting piece did not even cross
Didn't
my
register
mind
with you at all.
As a sexual kink. Now you're right, like the whole drawing blood and blood play piece of things, but I don't think that this was blood play. This was like sustenance.
This is true. This is true.
Because it didn't start in a sexual way either when he needed blood to survive.
Became sexual instantly, but you're right.
It did, but also that's part of the lore. That's part of the lore of the vampire is that the reason why it becomes sexual is so that they don't have people fight them when they need that sustenance.
No. I accept your arguments. Let's go with a level two.
I love that.
And speaking of biting, what trigger warnings do we have here?
Let me see. We got our content warnings. It contains explicit sexual content, some strong language, violence, enslaved characters. Nothing bad happens on the page. Discussions of gene tampering, and above all, a character who drinks blood in space.
I mean, there is that. Yeah. That about sums it up.
I mean, there's a tale, but...
Is that a trigger warning or is that awesome?
Well, you'll see in just a minute when we start to read the reviews. For some, it might be.
Oh, interesting. Well, and what's funny is I feel like coming from Ice Planet Barbarians, this was so tame in comparison.
100%. Like, definitely not the same level of spice that we got with Ice Planet Barbarians.
And far fewer trigger warnings.
That's true. But again, this, because it was like, I almost said group project. That's not the right word.
I mean, everybody pulled their weight is all I'm saying about that. If it is a group project.
I do like that there are more of these types of things coming out where it's like a whole set of books that a bunch of different authors come together and write their own take on whatever the prompt is. I love that. It's friend of the podcast, Alex Labriere, is part of a group of authors that's doing something like that for the Olympics, which is really cool.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited for that.
I can't wait.
Her new book coming out is Gold Medal in Love, I want to say, in February.
Yes. A Gold Medal in Love is the name of hers. And there is a whole group. It's the Love on the Podium. One of her posts says, Love on the Podium, the gayest games ever. So I think a lot
I
can't wait.
I'm so ready.
I'm really excited.
It's going to be so good. Something to look forward to in a couple of weeks.
Yes. Anywho, ratings for this, it was a 3.8 on Amazon, 3.3 on Goodreads. So middle of the pack, I think. Two-star from Amazon just says WTF. I'm giving this 2 stars solely because it's my own fault for reading this, but I needed an outer space book for bingo, just not my cup of tea. Which this made me laugh and also made me want to make a bingo card to put on our socials based on the different tropes that we've read throughout the year.
Yes.
Because I think we could get a full card bingo.
We absolutely could.
And then a 5-star says, I mean, this is Ruby we're talking about.
Yes, it is.
A vampire in space who also resembles the sock from Ice Planet Barbarians. Are we shocked? No. This is Ruby we're talking about after all. She knows how to write an intriguing story, and despite it being silly, it still ends up fantastic as always. And I, for one, would not be the slightest bit upset if this became a full book with more stories and more alien vampires we meet on Casa.
I think this is fair.
Yeah.
This feels like the era of fan fiction when every single fan fiction was like, don't read.
Yeah.
This is Ruby Dixon. This is what she does. And I'm kind of here for it. This person on Goodreads is not a 1-star. The tale, it freaked me out. Get it away from me. Get out of monster romance.
Right? This one I pulled because I was like, there were a lot of reviews. I think it was so meh reviewed because it came with that collection of books and it was a little out of pocket for what I think a lot of the readers are used to. So for some, maybe it opened up a new avenue of books that they would like to partake in. But I feel like if you're not into monster fucking, you're never going to be into monster fucking.
That's true. I guess I'm glad that you confirmed that for yourself. But also, like, sir, this is a Wendy's. Like... And this person understands. A 5-star on Goodreads says, I know you see the 5 stars and are questioning me. But listen, you have to understand. I haven't read an alien romance in a while, and when I finally do, after a long break, I get hooked. And this novella hooked me in! Dana is a human on a space station trapped with a vampire alien. Like, come on! That sentence alone is already hot. The smut was spicy, the plot was simple, and the two-hour audiobook flew by. Fangs, tail, and smut. What else do you need?
This was cool because I did listen to some of the audiobook. So the Kindle Unlimited came with the audiobook for this one, which is unusual.
I wondered why I got a pop-up that was like, you can listen if you have both the audiobook and the ebook. And I was like, but I don't. So why are you telling me this? Like, I appreciate
the Kindle Unlimited, the audiobook was part of it. So I did listen to some of it, but I like to be able to highlight. So like,
yeah.
Once we got past the initial, I needed to like read.
Yeah, I hear that.
So, as always, if you're interested in reading this one, the link for it is in our show notes, and we are going to be going through the full plot. There will be spoilers, but we will be right here waiting for you when you get back if you decide that this is something you want to read on your own first. You ready to get into it?
Absolutely.
All right, so let's get into it.
Hell yeah.
I struggled with this a little bit because it was like, I understand we were getting into an alien romance, but we start with intercepted communications to Superior Stables lab station. I was like, oh shit, am I going to have to really like think through this book?
And we know how much you hate thinking.
I hate thinking. Those were like big words to start. And I was like, oh God, like, is this going to be one that like I need to really put my thinking cap on to get through? It didn't end up being like that at all. Not in the least.
No, this is basically just an email chain.
Yes. And it's basically an alien, Nasit Sawast, who's the head of genetics at Superior Stables, any splice for the right price. They make clones for gladiators for other alien species. So they splice together, and it kind of made me think of, do you remember growing up those books that like you could flip the different sections of the page? It was like
one
of the board books, but it was split into like three or four pieces, and you could
change the head and the middle and the legs.
Kind of what that made me think of. Obviously though, aliens are going to make that much more sophisticated than
a little bit.
So we're getting this email chain between, it's a attention to customer order from stable master Lord Vador, first of his name. Interesting, which we don't really get any more information about this guy or anything past this conversation.
Yeah, he doesn't matter. He's just a plot device.
Yes. So he's inquiring to the status of the genetically spliced gladiator order that was put in a month ago. Mm. So he's basically like, hey, customer service, where's my order?
Yeah, literally. And customer service comes back and is like, we had some quality control issues, basically, is what occurred. They had an issue with the strain of gladiator stock that they requested. It came out with a blood deficiency and photosensitivity. It's all good, though. We are running some modifications to fix it. And the stable master is like, one, how did this happen? We do not want blood deficiency, and light sensitivity is not going to work for our purposes of being a gladiator fighting for entertainment, et cetera, et cetera. And also, we are not paying for additional modifications. What the hell are you doing? And then like any conversation, I feel like with customer support stopped responding. And the guy looking for his order is like, hello, hello. It's been a week since our last communication. Status update, please. But they're not getting a response because something went wrong.
Yes. So we find out that they're not getting a response because all of the scientists have fled the space station.
Indeed.
Due to said gladiator malfunction. So then we get the first chapter, and it is our female main character, Dana's perspective. And she was napping in a laundry shaft.
Mm-hmm.
So we find out that she is a human on this space station full of aliens, and it's much too quiet on the space station right now. Typically, it is pulsing with noise, and the moment the laboratory alarms went off, screeching about an escaped subject, I raced down the hall away from my alien master and climbed into one of the laundry chutes. And then she fell asleep. mid-alarm, which is wild behavior.
It does say that this has happened a couple of times, that like a subject has escaped and it takes them a while to find them and subdue them. As far as she's concerned, this is just a good opportunity and a good distraction for her to get away and have a few hours to herself.
Yes.
So she doesn't actually think that it's actually cause for alarm.
No, but the blaring alarms that were going off.
True.
And somehow she managed to fall asleep. This was the first time and not the last that I thought to myself, anytime we have a human in an alien situation, their self-preservation skills are zero.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit.
Yeah, like yeah. The alarms went off, so she ran away from people and then fell asleep in a laundry chute. Like, yeah. What?
Yeah, yeah. Not necessarily what I would do, but...
Yeah. Well, you have self-preservation skills.
That's true.
So we find out that she is a pet.
Yes.
To the aliens.
Yeah, which is very off-putting. It says she pulls the stupid frilly bow off of her head and the second one off her waist. Also, I found this interesting, and I didn't realize until after I'd finished and looked up the collection. I was confused by all the references to Halloween.
Oh, yeah, it did come out around Halloween.
Yeah, and all of the collection is like Halloween-based. So she mentions that the alien who owns her, Nasit, loves a garish bow. And even more garish dress for her. And she says, I swear, it's like Halloween every day.
Yeah. But like, that's pretty much where the Halloween references stop at this.
Yes.
At this point. So like, again, I waste no time in heading for the cafeteria. If we're going for a Halloween vibe, it's time for me to go trick or treating, specifically treat myself.
Yeah.
So there's no guards. There's no scientists. It's really still and quiet. And she's like, typically I get this like tasteless, disgusting nutrition bar kind of situation, which made me also think like, I wonder if my dog thinks like that about her dog food. Makes me want to like pour a little bone broth in it for her today. We do get that her mouth waters at the thought of getting to eat something other than a hard, flavorless nutrient bar. Nasit gives me nothing but those, and even those he's stingy with, because he likes a lean pet and not a puffy one. Jerk. I'm going to eat at least 6 bowls of noodles before they get back, I decide. Even aliens like to
have
keep their women.
Fat standards.
Yeah. Like, it just, I don't know.
If you're going to make a brand new world, why make it have the same exact problems as the old one? I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, man. But she can't get into the cafeteria because
nope.
As a pet, she doesn't have the, what's the word I'm looking for?
Clearance.
Clearance or the like biometrics to get into any of those rooms.
And the AI that runs the station doesn't even recognize her as a person. So it doesn't respond to her when she demands answers.
Don't worry. We'll find a way around that.
We will instantly. Maybe not instantly, but very soon.
Yes. So she's trying to like manually pry the door open. It's not working. So she's like, okay. It's emergency mode on the ship, and I need to find somebody to help me because otherwise I'm going to starve, essentially.
Yep.
So she heads down to the windows and realizes as she looks out that the evacuation pods are all gone.
Yes.
Except for one. There is one remaining evacuation pod. So the station's quiet because everyone left.
Yes.
And she was left behind.
Yep. And then she realizes that maybe this is a good thing. There's one escape pod remaining. Maybe she can take that last pod, figure out how to get away from here, and find her way back to Earth when she hears a distant crash of metal deep inside the station in the labs. And she realizes that she's not alone and that whoever it was that the aliens were fleeing from is still on the station with her.
My question is, were there no other splices that they're like clones that they were working on?
This is a great question because you would think that they would be operating at like mass efficiency and have like multiple strains going at the same time.
Yeah.
You wouldn't like work on one at a time.
And if they're fleeing from a threat, they're also not going to take all of their works in progress with them.
Maybe they do them in batches and all of the other ones were fine and got sent off. So they just had this one defective one that they were trying to fix before they started the next batch.
I like how we fill in the plot holes with our own ideas.
We reach. That's what we do here.
So, but we do get a description of the type of aliens that are on the ship. Typically, the tall, horned, blue aliens dress in elegant robes and hold their noses up in the air when it comes to the other alien races and pride themselves on how learned and civilized they are. And yet, they love slavery and gladiators. This is an impeccably done nod to the current state of the world.
We're so civilized, and yet. It says, spoiler alert, the entire universe is full of jerks. Which, okay, Ruby, I hear you. You're not giving me a whole lot of hope. Like, if I could escape this planet, it's not looking good for me out there. Which is a little bit devastating, frankly.
Yeah,
but
I agree. So she's like trying to plan, okay, what am I going to do? Again, the survival instincts are not great. She's like, maybe I'll just go back to the quarters and wait for them to come back. They'll be back at some point. And then she's like, maybe they'll come back and rescue me before I starve to death. Or maybe there's a monster and he'll eat me. But then her stomach growls and she's like, oh, wait. Right. I need to eat something. Let me go find a weapon.
Yeah. So she does realize also that the only way to get to the escape pods is to go through the center of the station, which is where the laboratory is.
Yes.
So she is going to have to traverse the area where the danger is eventually if she wants to escape. And the calculation there, too, is she doesn't know how long it'll take before the aliens come back. We will learn that it's going to be about a week.
Yes. Yep.
So she would have maybe not starved to death, but without water, she would definitely have died.
Yeah. Isn't it like you can go 2 weeks without food and like 3 days without
3 days
water
without water. Yeah.
So she goes looking for a weapon and says weapons aren't so hard to come by on a space station built for cloning monstrous gladiators, but humans are bite-sized snacks compared to the full meals of most aliens. So she picks up her first weapon and falls over because it's too heavy and too big. She tries a sledgehammer, a sword that's taller than she is, and something that looks like clawed gloves, except they're the size of a baseball glove, baseball mitt, not a glove, different. It says baseball mitt in here. I changed that word and then realized that you use a baseball glove when you're batting. Batting glove. Can you tell that I'm such an athlete? I did play softball for a long time, but I was never very good at it. So there's that. I like to read, okay?
I mean, I played soccer, but like, I don't know shit about baseball. I was like, sure, mitt, glove, makes sense to me.
So she hears another crash nearby and realizes that it's down the hall, but she finds a squeegee.
She finds a Roomba, basically, is what happens. One of the bots that cleans the ship putters past, moving down the hall. Long arm reaches out and begins to swipe across the glass, squeegeeing it clean. So she breaks that off, and it says it's flexible and long and reminds me a bit of a cross between a whip and a fencing blade. Will it protect me against whatever is loose on the ship? No, but it beats nothing.
Yeah, that's like that false sense of security with like, I've got something.
Yeah.
When you're about to fight a gladiator or think you're about to fight a gladiator, that's like bringing a knife to a gunfight.
Yeah, a little bit. It doesn't even have a blade. Like,
no,
that's not going to do anything except annoy him.
So we get a perspective shift in the next chapter, and it's Project Vador V8.3.
That's a lot of versions.
Well, right. They were trying to do all of these modifications to make him not have the issues that he had. But
yeah, but like 8 versions and then 3 minor releases on top of that, like, kind of implies that they thought they fixed it. Guys, you shouldn't be on minor version 3. You should be trying for version 9. That's crazy. I have issues with this development process.
That's your tech life there, because I was like, yeah, that sounds like a lot of versions, but I don't understand really what it means. Cool. Got it. So the first thought we get from him is blood. He can smell it nearby. He had gone through every compartment of the lab, ripping doors off hinges and bending metal to get any packets of blood that they had. And he has gone through the entire stash at this point.
Yeah. He does find one more bag left, and it fills him with relief and revulsion at the same time. And the urge to feed is sated for now, the fog in my mind lifted. I collapse on the floor with exhaustion, my hand on my brow. And then he hears something.
So this, though, when he's talking about how, like, the blood doesn't taste right. Did you ever watch the show True Blood?
Yeah, a little bit.
And how they had the, like, bottled blood, and that's what the vampires were all drinking. But really, it's like they had said it's not as good as the real thing, but, like, that's frowned upon, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I don't know. It reminded me of that a little bit.
Like, Twilight did the same thing, where it was like, yeah, you get used to animal blood. It's not as good as human blood, but... But
yeah.
It's fine.
I mean, get people to
get a little bit on board with the
on board with the vampire and be like, okay, so if this was real life, there are ways that it could be okay.
Yeah.
I mean, all the lore comes from something. I'm gonna stand on that hill because it comes from somewhere. Do I think they're real? Yes, I do.
You think vampires are real?
Yeah. You don't?
No.
Do you think fairies are real?
No.
Wow.
I think a lot of those types of myths come from, like, a time when we didn't realize that eating certain types of mushrooms makes you hallucinate, you know?
That's fair. But also, do you think aliens are real?
I think it's crazy to think that in the vastness of the universe, there has never been another planet like ours that was in the Goldilocks zone for life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't necessarily think that there are advanced alien civilizations that have been trying to communicate with us and potentially are already here. I think that's a bit of a stretch.
See, I totally think they are. And I think that it is one of those things where, like, we as a society think that we are so top of the totem pole and, like...
You just want humanity to get knocked down a couple pegs is what I'm hearing.
No, not necessarily. But, like, I think that people think that humans are, like, the most evolved and whatever because we're the most evolved on Earth. Mm-hmm. It is so narcissistic to think that there's not other stuff out there that's better than us.
That's true.
You know? I think it's all true. I think it's all real.
He hears movement, and there is something walking down one of the nearby halls, and he smells more blood, but this time it's the blood of a living creature, not the sterile bagged blood. It smells delightful. And this was an interesting take because we do get an explanation, however flimsy, of how he knows anything, which is the door opens and light from the hall floods in, and there's a creature in the doorway. It's like nothing I've ever seen before. It's short with bright orangish red hair that lies in waves around its hornless head. The skin of it is unpleasantly pale, like the underbelly of an animal. It wears a yellow shift that goes to its knees, and its legs are bare. It smells female. I've never seen a female before, but the learning implants embedded in my brain fill in the blanks for me. Female, adult, appealing, and full of fresh blood. So we are slightly dealing with Born Yesterday.
He is
a clone. He has never experienced the outside world. He's never experienced anything outside of this laboratory. But he has learning implants that teach him things.
Yeah, Ruby Dixon's pretty good about that with, like, giving them that, like, downloadable kind of
understanding,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So she makes it where it's like, okay, it gives you enough of a, all right, fine, we'll believe this for now.
Yep. Exactly.
So she turns the lights on in the lab and it says, pain floods my eyes. My skin lights up as if it's on fire and I let out a roar of agony. Turn the lights off. Now, if this is causing him so much pain and agony, why didn't they just turn the lights on?
I don't fucking know. Like, what do you mean?
They were trying to subdue him with, like, laser shocks. Like, just turn on the goddamn lights.
Now, the regular light switches, there must be some level of UV in the lights on the ship to make sure that, you know, everybody's getting their vitamin D.
I guess. Let's go with that. So she says, shit, sorry. She quickly hits the panel to kill the lights. She speaks in a foreign tongue, but the translator makes her words understandable. After a moment, she speaks in the Misaka homeworld tongue, though her words are halting and less comfortable. I didn't realize someone was here. And it says her words are apologetic and do a lot to ease my anger. And he replies, leave it off. It hurts my eyes. And she doesn't realize what she's dealing with because she asks, is that why they left you behind? Like, again, they left you to be eaten because of the light allergy. Bad news for you, though.
But how does she get from it hurts my eyes to you have a light allergy? Also, no self-preservation skills.
Mm-mm.
You just plunged yourself into darkness with a stranger.
That's crazy. Like, you're already not a person to the aliens on this space station.
Yeah.
Like, why would you assume friendly intent at this juncture?
She does keep referring to herself as a poodle.
Yeah.
Which is weird to me.
It's funny to me. Like, it evokes that, like, really useless kind of vibe. Now, I know that poodles are very smart. Don't come at me in the comments. I am aware that poodles are very smart dogs. But I do mean, like, when we groom them and put little bows on them, they look kind of ridiculous.
See, I think more teacup Yorkie.
You make an excellent point. But I feel like human to alien size is more of like a mid-sized dog.
Okay.
Rather than like a toy dog.
Oh, yeah. Could you imagine being that size?
Yeah, that would be awful.
It also kind of makes me have a little more respect for those tiny dogs and why they can be so mean.
Yeah, they literally have to. They have to pretend they're big.
Because they're afraid of everybody. They have better self-preservation skills than this human does, by the way.
That's pretty true. That's pretty true.
So she goes, have you seen it? And he's like, what monster? Which should have been her second clue that he is,
indeed,
in fact, the monster.
Yes.
She says, the one everyone evacuated to escape. Don't tell me you were unaware. This station's deserted, buddy. They left me behind because I'm a poodle, and I guess they left you to be eaten because of the light allergy. Bad news for you, though. If we run across the monster, I'm going to trip you, so he eats you first.
Why would you tell him your intent?
Exactly.
If you're going to be ruthless about your self-preservation, the first thing is to gain their trust so that they never suspect that you're going to betray them.
Yeah, 100%.
Honestly. Anyway, so he laughs at her and realizes that he's the monster that she's referring to. It says, I'd grown tired of their poking and prodding and broke my restraints when they tried to give me yet another one of their experimental treatments that left my insides burning. And they tried to suppress him with shock sticks, and that didn't work. They tried gassing him, but he can hold his breath for an hour thanks to their modifications. So that didn't work either. And then they fled. So he says, you're sure they left? And she, once again, not realizing that she's fucking in danger, says, positive. I'm not normally alone for this long. I checked the escape pods and they're all gone. We've been left with whatever it is that's terrorizing this place. I'm surprised you haven't run into him. And he does what any monster would do and lumbers toward her all sinister.
But she can't see that because she's in the dark.
Right, because she put herself in darkness. And he rips the light panel out of the wall so she can't use it and says, bad news. Little one, I am the monster. They fled. And she's like, cool. You're messing with me, right? And he... We're going to fall back on the born yesterday trope a little bit here because he says, I do not understand. What is this messing? And she goes, you're teasing me. You're not the real reason they left, are you? And he replies, I broke out. So they left to save themselves because I said I would kill them if I caught them and drink their blood.
But like, they forgot that they forgot to turn on the lights.
That was the whole reason why they were still experimenting on him to begin with. Why didn't they just turn on the light?
And then he's like, so that's why I'm here. Why are you here? And she says, because I'm a poodle. And he says, a dull. I still do not understand.
Yeah. So she thinks this could work to my benefit because I, being seen as weak and wronged by the aliens who experimented on him, could make him realize that we're kind of on the same side here. And she says, I'm a pet. Aliens, the big blue guys, stole me from my home planet a few years ago. The guy that owns me makes me sleep in a cage and treats me like I have no functioning brain cells. And he kind of like chuckles a little bit. And she's like, okay, good. We're making progress here. And she thinks to herself, haven't I been learning how to deal with those bigger and stronger than me all this time? I can handle one more. If he's not on their side, he's on mine. If they think he's a monster, he can be my monster. I mean, see, now this is some critical thinking.
Yes, but you still need to have the self-preservation skills to get to that point. He already could have drained her.
Yeah, no.
But also, this is a little bit of a plot hole. Because it says that they stole her from her home planet a few years ago, but then we get information that she had already been somebody else's pet and had to do a lot of stuff. So like in a couple year time frame, it doesn't seem to match up in terms of what information we're given elsewhere. I'm only picking up on this now, having gone through it already once.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like fine. Few is so loosey goosey. It could be 2 years or it could be 10 years,
I guess.
And she's trying to like, I don't know. She's trying not to overcomplicate it and make sure that there's a clear line between these guys are bad and treated me bad.
Yeah.
And I think like offering up additional information that could be used against you is not a good idea in this situation.
That's true. Also, that's funny to me that you used two numbers that are not either of the numbers I associate with the word few.
I mean, like three is the normal. A couple versus a few, two versus three. But like, I don't know, when I'm talking about a few months, like
could be
it's
three,
less than a year.
Could be seven.
Yeah.
That's right? Fair. Okay. Yep.
And like if it's 7 years, then I feel like it's more reasonable to think that she could have been an old lady's pet for a couple of years and had to learn how to read so that she could help her with all of her devices and shit.
That's okay. So then he's like, you're not wearing shoes. There's a big mess because she stubs her toe.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, they don't give me shoes. Poodle, remember? I get to keep my cute little toesies on the cold floorsies because my master is a huge Dixies and thinks it's cutesy. I hated it.
Yeah. And he goes, what? And she goes, never mind. I hate being a pet and I'm venting and talking nonsense. And he like stops her from stepping forward because there's broken glass on the floor. And she goes, he hovers over me in the darkness, and I suspect if I reached my hand above my head, I'd find his face. I'm really curious about his face. We're already kind of just like, let's just say.
We have a destination.
Yeah. Yes, but I was going to say Dana's a monster fucker.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
As soon as she was like, he can be my monster.
Yeah. And to have been somebody's pet for so long, she is likely, probably not touch starved because she's probably
the wrong touch starved.
Yeah. But likely just like ready for some action.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I also think the hand on my arm might have claws, but I'm scared to check. My heart hammers. Despite my fear, I keep a breezy smile on my face in the darkness because you can still hear a smile. He can see it. He can see her in the darkness.
Yeah, she doesn't know that, though, or at least not yet. So he tells her that he broke everything looking for blood. And she's like, you weren't fed nutrient bars or anything? Like, they kind of suck. But I mean, when you're hungry enough, you don't get choices. And he's like, I haven't ever eaten them. I've just been here in the lab. And she goes, in the dark. And he says, yeah, the light hurts my eyes and they make my skin burn. And she's like, Are you trying to tell me you're a vampire? He hates the light. He drinks blood. This all feels familiar. And he doesn't know what that is. And she's like, nah, doesn't matter. So she's like, are you hungry right now? And he goes, ravenous. And she's like, oh, shit, I'm fucked. And he goes, I am more interested in talking to you than drinking you down, no matter how good you smell. You haven't run away, even though you're afraid. I can feel your pulse hammering. And she's like, where would I go? I'm a pet, remember? And I'm not running away because if you're their enemy, you're automatically my friend. And she's like, okay, I need food and I couldn't get into the cafeteria, but you're strong. So it's possible that you can get me into the cafeteria. And if you've never eaten anything else, maybe you'll like noodles. She asks for his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I only have a batch identification number. And she goes, you know what? Dracula is a better name than that. Or how about Vlad? Vlad the Impaler. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I will use that one. It sounds intimidating. Like, why would you give him that option? Why not go with Edward?
Well, maybe she's been gone for so long that she doesn't even know.
Wow.
Okay. How sad for her.
Can you believe, though, that she would have to have been gone for at least 20 years?
No, stop that. Stop that right now. Nope. I refuse to believe it. That came out a few years ago. So she does keep saying, like, you're not going to kill me? You sure you're not going to kill me? And he says, no, even if I smell really fucking good. And he says, creature, you smell incredible. And I can hear your pulse pound with every beat of your heart. And I have not attacked you yet, have I? So I love that he is more interested in getting to know her than he is with eating her.
Yeah. And I do like that he says, I don't want to kill you. You're the first one that's talked to me like I'm a normal person, not a mistake. And so he respects that even though she's terrified and he can tell that she's terrified, she's still like being normal with him and like treating him like a person. And that goes a long way toward making him less inclined to eat her.
She does say, let's head into the hall. You can guide me. And he calls her a bossy thing for a pet, which I loved.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And he picks her up by the waist. And we get kind of, again, they're still in the dark. He's not wearing a shirt. My hands touch thick chest hair and graze over rock-hard arm muscles and warmth. He smells like blood and something else, and I wonder what kind of alien he is. And then he puts her down and says, you're standing in front of the door to the lab. It closed behind you when I ripped out the panel. You can go into the hall and change the settings on the lights. And she does that. She goes outside and she realizes that, again, that she can't adjust anything because she gets no personnel authorization message every time. And she's like, I can't do it unless you have a severed hand somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, I think I might have taken a finger off when I attacked them. So from this point forward, we're going to be walking around with a severed finger.
Yeah, absolutely. That is absolutely happening. So she uses the finger to get into the system and turns down the light. He asks, you know what you're doing? And she explains that before she was owned by this scientist alien, she was the pet of an elderly Masaka lady who had bad eyes. So she had to learn how to read and how to navigate their systems to help this woman with all of her correspondence and shit. So she finds the environmental controls and turns down the lights. And out comes Vlad into the hallway. A deep blue hand extends toward her with three long fingers and a thumb, each one tipped by a nasty-looking claw. A thick vein traces over the back of his hand, and his fists look strong and brutal, like he could snap my neck without trying very hard. And then the doors open, and Vlad, the hopefully friendly and not impaler, steps out so I can get a good look at him. Cool, buddy.
So this is the first glimpse she's really getting of him because, again, they were in the dark before. So he's got the same strange three-toed feet that the Masaka do and the deep blue skin, but he's got no horns. His face seems more angular than theirs and his eyes a bit wider. And the red of them is a bright crimson and vivid. Strangely enough, he's got thick, dark lashes, heavy eyebrows, and short black hair that sticks up from his head in spikes. This is like the quintessential broody vampire look.
Oh, for sure.
If only his hair came to a widow's peak.
Yep, exactly. So he says, what now? What does one do when you're not enclosed in a tube or being forced to perform medical stress tests? And she seems like confused by the idea that he doesn't have like leisure time.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre. Like, how have you lived on this space station where they're making clones to fight to the death and not realized that they don't fucking get downtime during the day?
But how many people bring their pet to work? She probably stays in the...
Still, common sense would indicate if they break containment pretty regularly and that causes alarms to go off, they're not supposed to be out and about.
That's fair. So she goes, how about we find our escape pod and get the hell out of Dodge? And he goes, if this is Dodge, I agree.
Yeah, I didn't mind that.
So they get to the escape pods, mm-hmm. and the one that has been left behind has a dozen flashing error lights. And she's like, well, now I know why there's only this one left, because it's not going to work.
But once she gets through all of the error messages, she discovers that it's just that the battery is dead, essentially, on the escape pod. Mm-hmm. So she starts the sequence to charge it and then is dismayed to see that it's going to take a week to charge, which is why no one tried to take this one. And so he's like, I guess we wait. And she was like, let's go snoop through everyone's rooms. We can see who's got the best clothes and the most comfortable bed and make ourselves at home there for the next week, which is hilarious, and I loved it. She proceeds to jump on all of the aliens' beds with her dirty feet and then says, you should point out the bed that you want to claim and I will keep my dirty feet off of it unless you have other plans. And he says, other plans for a bed? Which, like, is she already implying that she wants him to fuck her? Like, god damn, we really do have a destination.
Yep. So, yeah, basically she says that, but then changes the subject and is like, there's one escape capsule left. And since we're both kind of in the same boat, maybe we can go someplace together, fresh start and all that.
Mm-hmm. But before they can do that, we need to find food because I'm hungry and like I gotta fucking eat something. And maybe you can open the cafeteria doors. And he says, I need to be honest with you. The lab is out of blood and it might not be safe for you to be around me much longer. I need to feed soon. And this is where she gets the idea of maybe you can eat regular food and you just don't know because you've been trapped in the lab. And she goes, maybe you're not as vampiric as we thought. You look pretty normal to me, other than the teeth and, well, the tail and the really big muscles. And it says, her gaze flicks over my chest and a new scent blooms in the air to pair with her blood scent. It's musky and makes my cock harden, and suddenly I'm full of wanting for more than just blood.
I hate the word musky. Maybe because it sounds so much like musty.
Yeah.
Because musky, right, and arousal happen to coincide a lot. Yes. But I think it's because it's so close to musty that I'm, yeah, like, that doesn't sound appealing to me.
What do you think of him being able to smell the fact that she's aroused?
Alien. Monster.
Yeah. It's monster. Add that to the bingo. And she goes, come on, you're about to try some noodles. Aliens love noodles. And then it cuts to, my body does not love noodles.
So they got into the cafeteria. Dana is in ecstasy as she fills bowl after bowl with a variety of foods, most of them the noodles she'd mentioned. And the smell of it is making him a little nauseous. And then he tries to eat some and they come back up immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, all right, maybe raw meat will work. But apparently, yep, these aliens are vegetarians, which, mm-hmm, makes sense because they're at a space station. Raw meat is not something, yeah, that you're going to find. It's going to need to be shipped from somewhere. And,
yeah,
so that makes sense that they would.
It does.
They would have vegetarian diets as any being on a space station.
Unless this is an advanced alien race that can grow meat, because that's like a thing that we're getting pretty good at doing.
Interesting. Want to know who probably leads up that research? An alien.
Why would an alien from another planet have any incentive to assist humanity's evolution and advancement?
I don't know. Uh-huh. Other than maybe they're stuck here and they're like, well, while we're here, we don't want to live on this shithole. We want to make it so it's up to our standards. So
I'm obsessed.
I'm going to give you a well-thought-out answer for each and every one of those questions because I believe they're real. I've put a lot of thought to this.
I see that, and I respect it. So she, for some reason, gets the bright idea to offer herself up for him to feed on.
Lack of survival skills.
Just insane. So she asks, you drank all the blood bags in the lab, right? And he's like, yeah, but I don't feel the wildness. Like, perhaps if I keep the hunger at bay, I won't need large amounts, just one bag, maybe less. And she's like, well, if it hurts, we're not going to do it again. And he's like, do what again? And she says, feed you, of course.
Want to suck my blood?
And he goes, yes.
It does say, a ragged groan escapes me and my cock surges in my loincloth. She'd let me drink from her?
Mm-hmm.
The loincloth thing kills me.
I hate that he's in a loincloth. I hate it so much. So Dana agrees with us and says, I'm a total nitwit offering myself up to a vampire. I know I'm playing with fire. It's just that Vlad seems kind of nice, if clueless, for a monster. Like, girl, just because you're not smart enough to hide your like master plan from the person that you're with to ensure your survival doesn't mean he isn't smart enough to gain your trust.
That's true, but also as much as she doesn't have the survival instincts, this would be me.
Girl, what? Why?
No, with the like, oh no, he seems nice. Like,
I guess the logic is that he could have already killed her by now.
Yeah.
Like if he'd wanted to.
I think my problem is like I've got good gut instincts, but if it passes the gut instinct, all bets are off.
Uh-huh. So she thinks maybe if I offer him a few sips at a time, we can manage the situation, work together, scratch each other's backs. And he's like, are you sure you want to do this? A good monster.
But she thinks, hell no, I'm not certain at all. But it's better to be his friend than his enemy. He needs me to stay alive and I need his strength. He could kill me and drink all my blood even if I protested. But if we're working together, I have a semblance of control. This all makes sense.
It does. It really does.
And she's like, as long as you can manage how much you take, I'm fine with it. But I don't want to end up as empty as those blood bags. Now, he also is new to all of this. So like he's going to make a promise that he doesn't know if he can keep.
Yeah, because, like, I feel like in every vampire lore, there's, like, it's an emergency. You can feed from me. And then they, like, get in there and they're like, oh, the blood.
I can't stop.
Yeah. And they're like, stop, you're killing her.
All of them. It always happens.
Yeah. Anyway. So then she makes it worse. Because she says, you know, vampires traditionally bite people on the neck. There's a great big vein there. Like, girl, why would you point him to your jugular?
Well, and she's like, she thinks, God, why am I like this? Me. Because I say things without thinking and then I'm like, oh, man, that's stupid. Yes.
She also goes on to think, I don't want him to drink from my wrist. For some reason, I need him to drink from my neck. The thought of his mouth on my throat is echoing through all of my sexy fantasies.
I mean, you know.
Get it, girl.
So he pulls her onto his lap and she thinks to herself, why am I getting aroused by his manhandling? Because, girl, it's...
I mean, why wouldn't you?
Exactly. Because you feel small.
She says, what are you doing? And he goes, I've never bit into a person before. I'm trying to figure out the best way to do it, which is funny and fair.
Yeah, absolutely. But he says, don't thrash when I bite you. I don't want to harm you, which is very sweet. Mm-hmm. But she says that's not exactly the most reassuring thing to say. That sounds very reassuring to me. Like, I don't want to hurt you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in the next moment, twin fangs pierce my neck and it feels as if a hot dagger is stabbing into my throat. Or at least it does for a moment. In the next, there's nothing but complete and utter bliss.
Mm-hmm.
This tends to be the trope, I suppose.
It does. It's an interesting take because, I don't know, like he's an artificial vampire?
Yeah, like, but he's got the vampire DNA.
This was an accident. They wouldn't have purposefully put vampire DNA in him. This is a blood deficiency that manifested as him needing to drink a lot of blood.
Or they didn't realize that one of the other species that they took from had some vampire DNA in there and they accidentally used that.
In which case, I would not want to order my gladiators from this service. Like,
that's
they sound
true.
Incompetent.
But I think that the blood deficiency piece of it, like, he's got fangs. Do all of the gladiators have fangs? Because that, to me, speaks of vampire DNA.
All right. We'll allow it.
Also, I love how I say that with earnest and complete, like,
confidence,
but like also just a straight face, like,
yeah, that speaks to you of vampire DNA. Understood. So she makes a choked sound and he reaches up and cups her chin and he says, shh, just a little more, cease your squirming. And she thinks, am I squirming? It's hard to tell because a complete and utter orgasm is making its way through my system.
This is a weird way to say this.
Yeah. And then it says, I pant, shocked at the ferocious desire that's flooding through me, all because of his bite. His teeth sink in again, the sound wet and strangely sensual, and I moan.
Nope.
I don't like that.
I don't either. So he groans. He likes her sounds, and she's lifting her hips. His hand goes to her belly, and she grabs it, desperate to climax, and pull him lower under my tunic and between my thighs. Now, we've been given information that he has claws, sharp claws on each of his hands.
Yes, on his fingers.
Fingers, right. So
how are you gonna?
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason why. Never mind.
You were gonna say the same thing that I was thinking.
Lesbians?
There's a reason why lesbians get those two nails that are shorter. Yeah, absolutely. Yes! Absolutely. That's the same thing that I was thinking too, and I almost said it the same. So that's really funny. So the noise he makes tells me he's just as into it as I am, and I guide that hand to my tiny panties and push them aside so he can touch me. He's telling her she tastes so good, blood tastes so much better. I whimper, pulling two of his fingers together and then guiding them to my clit. Watch your claws. What? I'm sorry. No. Uh-uh.
No. How is he going to know?
How is he going to know? There's so many pieces. No. Nope. There's so many ways where one slip up could injure her pretty badly.
Yeah.
And we'll get to a point, which I went absolutely the fuck not, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
Uh-huh. So it doesn't matter. Somehow he manages. She uses his hand to show him how to touch her there, how to rub gentle circles over that nub of flesh until she's writhing. He takes another sip from my throat even as he touches me, and the combination of his bite and his fingers make me climax so hard that I see stars.
I mean, climax so hard that she sees stars? Great. Good for her. That's fantastic.
Love that for her. Especially since it's been a long time since I've come. A really freaking long time. I didn't realize how badly I needed that.
Mood.
Yeah.
But she goes, well, that was, whew, did you get enough? Funny. But this is also, Ruby Dixon does some of that awkward conversation in her writing anyway.
She likes a strong, awkward heroine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, their pillow talk, if you want to call it that, though, not great. Did you enjoy my touch then? His hand slips between my thighs and caresses me, then cups my pussy casually as if to say that it belongs to him.
Didn't like that.
Well, and she says, I didn't hate it. I say, quivering, I didn't hate it either.
Ugh.
I mean, I can be guilty of downplaying stuff with that type of response too, but I kind of did hate that.
So we skip forward a week.
Yes.
And in that week, they basically put together a plan. She serves as his little feeding bag. He makes her come a bunch. And she's picking a planet for them to go to, basically. Yes. And she says she's looking for planets that have settlements where the nights are longer than the days. She doesn't want to go to a space station. She hates recycled air. And she wants a place where the government is either crooked or non-existent because we're going to have to bribe our way in. So she thinks she found the best spot for them. There's a farm planet three systems over in the Casa system. It has a slow rotation and a continent close to the pole, which means that winters are long and the nights are 20 hours out of the 29 in the full day. And there's only a local government at the northernmost settlement, and I'd bet a handful of credits they can be bribed. Now, I could not live in a place where it's night 20 hours out of 29.
No, but you're not a vampire.
No, but like, she's a human.
Yeah, but
and she's
like,
already too pale.
But then think about it in terms of for him, even if it was that 12-hour split, either they're going to be ships crossing in the night, because they're never going to be able to be awake at the same time. Or like, he would, if the light from the hallway when she opened the door bothered him.
Yeah.
then like it would be really difficult for him to have a place, and he would end up being stuck inside in this space.
You're right. So they pick this planet, and it's going to take 4 months for the pod to arrive at this planet. And she's like, it's all good, though. We can just go into the stasis pods and wake up to fresh air. And he's like, ooh, I can't go into stasis because I need blood. And she's like, ooh. But we're just going to like pretend that it's going to be fine, that they're going to basically live in a space the size of a twin size bed together for 4 months.
The first thing I thought was how smelly that would be.
Oh my God.
Also, bathroom situation. Like,
we didn't talk about that at all.
Which I feel like, and that's normal. That doesn't ever get brought up in movies or books. But like, that's one of my first thoughts. If I'm going to be spending, like, think about it. Your first like weekend away with a new significant other, and you're like, we're going to be in a hotel together for a week or a weekend. I need to figure out a bathroom situation.
Well, and like, I don't know. My problem is like, I get overstimulated and like need to not be touched for like, just like my body is just like, I need to be in a corner by myself, not being touched. Don't touch me. And I cannot imagine being trapped in a place where I couldn't not be touched for 4 months.
Yeah.
Insane. So they pack in as much food as they can, and they're kind of like surveying the pod. There's no bed, just the stasis pods to lounge in. And she says, I hope you're not claustrophobic. And he's like, I've been in and out of tubes my whole life. So like, this is roomier than usual for me, but you're the one who's like used to being able to run around. She's like, nah, I'm good. It's all good. And she says we could practice some other things in the pod since we're already in here. And he says, like what? And she says, like having sex, which, okay.
So it's been a week.
Mm-hmm.
He's been feeding off of her. He's been making her come.
Yeah.
We've never gotten to that point. He says, you want me? And she thinks, God, I do. We've flirted at this for a week now. He's touched me and drunk for me. We've kissed and cuddled. We've snuggled in bed together every night. We've even showered together. We've been inseparable since that first time he drank from me. Yet he's never asked me for sex. I'm tired of waiting. I want to be touched. I want to be filled. So they've showered together, but she still seems surprised when the loincloth comes off.
Yeah. Weird.
So she does say, something tells me we're not going to make it 4 months without making love at least once. And he says, you only want to do it once. That doesn't sound like you.
Yeah, which is funny. But she says, I want you to make love to me. And he goes, right here in this cramped pod. And she goes, right here, right now. I want you. I'm going to want you on the trip, too. So we need to give things a trial run, because if we can't manage to have sex in here, I'm tossing out another bag of noodles. Which, she's got priorities. I respect it.
And he says, I'm certain I can make everything fit. And she says, does he know what kind of joke he's hinting at? Because I've seen what he's packing in quick glances here and there. And while I do think he can fit, I also know it's going to take a lot of lubrication.
Yes. Now, this is funny because we don't actually get any mention of lubrication aside from the fact that she's never been so damn wet in her life.
Yeah.
But have you seen all of the discourse around heated rivalry?
Yes. And I want to watch it.
Yes.
But also, since Netflix bought HBO, they've made it so that I can't use my sister's HBO account now. And like in the week that that happened, that's like the first thing they changed.
Absolutely devastating.
Yes, I agree.
So the thing about heated rivalry, it's gay hockey players, which like,
love
fuck
that.
Yeah. And there was like a lot of discourse after they get together sexually for the first time.
Yeah.
And how like they didn't do it realistically. Like there wasn't like, they didn't like do an enema. They didn't like, you know, do proper prep and like things like that. And the showrunner came out and said, did you want to see an enema on screen? No, no, we're just going to assume that happened and move on. Like, let's go.
That's funny. It's a good point because we do stuff like that too here where we like nitpick at all of the things that should have happened.
But it's not a guide to the lifestyle. Yeah. It is not an instruction manual. And romance especially, like we often overlook things like morning breath and peeing after sex and the awkwardness of shower sex. You're making a choice to have the erotica not get punctuated by real life, because real life can be awkward and it's not as fun sometimes. And for the narrative and the experience, like, you just kind of accept that these things happen in the background, not on the page, not on the screen. And I laugh to myself because you and I are so guilty of being like, no prep was done for this to be their first time having anal sex.
That's all I have to say about that. That's an excellent point. So this whole scene was great.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think of the conversation we had about how, like, if any person is presented with a vagina, they should consider themselves so lucky.
Yeah.
And he's kissing her. He's making his way down her body. He just moves lower and lower, kissing his way down my body. His hands skim over my hips and he pushes up the short hem of my dress until my pussy is unveiled before his gaze. He's touched it often enough in his feedings to know what causes me pleasure, but I still hold my breath as he reverently frames it with his hands, fingers light as they brush over my thighs. And he says, this might be my favorite thing in the universe.
Yep.
Damn.
Yeah, that's a vibe. However.
Yeah. Yeah.
He starts to go down on her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Using his tongue, that's all great.
Yeah, we love this. She's demanding more.
Yep.
Knowing that I'm playing with fire, I lift my arms, holding on to the heavy bags of supplies behind me so I can brace myself against them. Give me everything you've got. And he says, everything. And pleasure spikes. I make another needy sound, the delicious pressure building in my limbs, deep in my belly, everywhere. And he asks, more? And she says, more, knowing just what I'm agreeing to.
So when he asks more, we get his fangs gleam so close to my skin. And then he pierces my skin, sending me into the hardest climax ever. I come with a shattering cry, shocked at the bolt of intense pain pleasure that comes with his fangs.
They're buried in the sensitive pink flesh surrounding my clit, and he takes the most careful sips of me before dragging his tongue over the spot to seal the tiny wounds.
No, fuck no. This is where I was like, no, fuck that. I'm out. No way. Are you kidding me? No. And like I said, yeah, the biting piece, I was like, yeah, I'm a little bit of a biter. No, keep not your like teeth away from there. No, thank you. Nuh-uh. No way.
She asks, do you know how to do this next part? Which I didn't like because it reminded me that he was born last week, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, uh-huh, I get it. But he goes, I bet I can figure out how it works. I put the part of me that aches into the part of you that aches. And like, all right, fair enough. I did also like his cock's as big as I expected, with all kinds of fascinating ridges trailing up his length. Talk about made for her pleasure. I was like, Ruby knows what's up.
Yeah, absolutely. What I didn't like is, now this is the first time that he's ever done this. It's the first time they're doing this together. She wants him to have a good time. That's great. But she says, I want you to feel good too. I want you to lose control, Vlad. Take what you need. You're talking about a gladiator who could drain you dead. Don't say lose control.
No.
You don't want him to lose control.
No, you do not. Absolutely not. I felt the same way. I have it highlighted. I was like, this is a bad idea. Do not tell him to lose control.
Nope. She does tell him to bite her while he's deep inside of her, which he does. But also, like, that's dangerous, too. There's too much movement with the bite at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
And like,
especially if he's sinking her teeth into her neck.
Right. He could rip out her jugular with one wrong move. Yeah.
I don't like that. It says, there's the sweetest piercing sensation that I'm hopless as the orgasm rolls through me with all the subtlety of a supernova. I clench around him, crying out and desperately holding onto him as I come. Dimly, I'm aware that he's growling even as he fucks me, and I realize he's coming too. And she feels warm and safe and so damn good and happy. For the first time in what feels like a very, very long time, I'm happy. And as she's staring at him, dick drunk, she says, Vlad. And he goes, yes, Dana. And she goes, I need to tell you. And then a crackling chirp sounds over the ship's intercom. Ship approaching. Estimated arrival, 1 hour. So the aliens are back.
Yep.
And she doesn't get to tell him the ill-conceived confession that she was about to say. They gotta go. For some reason, he's like, we should get more food. And she's like, we're going now. We're getting the fuck out of Dodge. And they do. They get off the space station. They downloaded a bunch of other system maps in the hopes of throwing the aliens off their trail to make it look like they could have gone anywhere.
Yes.
And Dana's still very nervous that, like, they're going to track them down. But it seems like they're good. Vlad kind of turns to her and is like, so what was it you're going to tell me? And she's like, it doesn't matter now. And he goes, just say it. You hated it, didn't you? Hated my touch. That's what you were going to say. I was like, bro,
which we don't frequently get the male main character getting that like vulnerability spiral.
That's true. It also was funny that he's been quiet and she's kind of nervous about that. And she thinks this is our home for the next 4 months. And it's going to be really, really awkward if he's mad at me.
But like, why would she think that he's mad at her? Because other than he's being quiet, like they're going through a stressful
moment. Don't pretend like you haven't gotten in your head in exactly this way.
I get in my head like that all the time. But I'm just
saying. You think
saying,
she's more logical than you? No. I don't think so.
But in this like hour time frame, I don't typically get in my head an hour after. That's not true either.
So we'll allow her moment of illogical concern.
That's true.
And we'll allow him his vulnerability in thinking that she must have hated it. And she says, you're an idiot. And says, I was going to tell you that I loved you and that I know it's only been a week, but I'm happy with you, obsessed with you, and I'm glad we're together. And it seems inappropriate, but there it all is. You can tell me I'm crazy for being in love after a week and I'll get it. That's not normal, right?
No, it's
not. No, it isn't.
Also, you are trapped in this space for 4 months now. So, like, you're letting the crazy out right now, and that's fine and all. But he's going to agree with you one way or the other because he's trapped with you for 4 months. So, just saying. But he does seem to actually be glad to hear that.
Yes.
He tells her, you're obsessed with weird and normal suddenly. Dana, what about any of this is normal? I think we should give up on normal, in fact, at this point. We should write our own rules, which is nice.
Yeah.
So she says, rule number one, we kiss a lot. And he says, rule number two is me telling you that I love you too after each time we kiss. And she says, I like the sound of that. And then we get an epilogue. And it's not 1 year later.
No, we just skipped the 4 months of traveling in the pod.
Good. Because it's going to be stinky, and then add the sex in there too. It's going to make it even stinkier. The thought of it, I'm glad we skipped over it because I can't.
Yeah. They're stepping out onto the planet and everything is so open. He clearly has a little bit of agoraphobia because like it's a wide open space for the first time and he's a little uneasy. But we get a brief little glimpse of them talking to the guy that they've apparently been communicating for the last couple of months, planning their arrival and giving him the agreed upon sum to set them up. And she mouths, I love you. And I kiss her because those are the rules.
And that is how we end.
That is how we end.
Now, what do you give this one?
I think I'm landing at a 3.
Okay.
I think the writing is very good, very Ruby Dixon. I think it fits her personality and the style. And I love how she gets right into an alien romance.
Mm-hmm.
I think the premise was interesting and fun. Vampires are kind of not my thing. So I think overall, it's just like, yeah, this is a fun twist on a vampire. It's still a vampire. I don't really like being bit. No. Ruby delivers always on a fun, spicy novella. And I liked this one overall. How about you?
I think this one's like a 2.5 for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I do like her work. This was not her best work, I don't think. It did feel a little rushed, which I mean, I feel like when you've been given kind of a prompt to write something within a specific time frame, that there's the risk that that's going to happen.
Absolutely.
It was fine. It was fun. There were pieces of it I really liked. There were other pieces that I just was... I think that this whole storyline could have been better served for a more elaborate plot, yeah. You know? Like,
yep.
We needed more. It could have been a longer book. And it would have, I think, if it were longer and had more... I don't even want to say depth to it because that's not what I'm looking for. But I think that I would have liked
build
it more.
Up, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, I agree. I think it needed to be like an Ice Planet Barbarians length where it was like, it didn't need to be much longer, but we needed just a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, and I could have gone with more than just the like two scenes that we got to.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that
but
wholeheartedly.
Also, we need to remind ourselves that like this, because it was a group of authors, and I really don't think that a lot of the authors are on the same kind of weirdness level
Spice
that
level?
We've been dealing with, you know?
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of that.
Yeah. She was toning it down a little bit.
Yes. Which maybe that's why. Maybe because she was kind of toning it down that like we weren't getting what we usually get from her.
Yeah.
And that might be what my issue is. Like, let your freak flag fly. Let it happen.
Yes. Come on, Ruby. Anyway, with all of that said, it's time for my favorite part. Who did you cast, especially as another big blue alien with a tail?
So, for Dana's character.
Oh, a choice.
I am picturing someone very almost frail and meek looking, but can also be a little bit of a badass when she needs to be.
Uh-huh.
I picked Ariana Grande.
Yep.
She's always been a tiny little thing, even before... you know, all of the talk about her, her body, which is an issue within itself.
Yes.
But also, she's a really good actress.
I think she, not only does she look like someone who could play
a pet,
a person who is picked up for being a pet.
Yes.
Like, she's got that energy of like, well, I'm scared, but I'm going to pretend I'm in control of this situation.
Yes.
And I think it works very well.
Yes, I agree. I think she's insanely talented. So for Vlad, Jason Statham, I don't know. He's got like a broody look. He could be a vampire.
Oh my God. What? This is hilarious. Now I'm like, okay, but now I'm like, Hang on a second, because I am trying to imagine Jason Statham saying some of these lines.
Me telling you that I love you too, after each time we kiss. Like, it just...
Listen, even the ones that seem like they're really tough can sometimes be a little bit romantic, okay? You don't see it all the time.
This is a wild pick. I respect it, but this is crazy.
But also, it's harder for me to cast these when I didn't like really love and connect with the characters, you know?
Yeah.
So this was kind of a tough one for me.
It's fun to picture now, so I will give you that.
So, what are we reading next week?
Oh, next week is going to be fun. We are reading Ducked by Rebecca Massey and Adeline Graves. So we are back on our sentient object bullshit for sure. And what better way to spend January, the worst month of the year,
than to talk about a rubber duck?
Yeah.
A sentient rubber duck. Have you been reading anything else recently? I know that things are kind of crazy with the holiday season and all of that, but anything else on your...
Not that I am currently reading. I did just get a Kindle recommendation. That's another kind of like got Pride and Prejudice / Bridgerton vibes. So you can see where my mood reading is taking me. It's called Tempests and Tea Leaves by Rachel Morgan. So I'm kind of excited for that. I think it'll be a fun, hopefully cozy Regency read.
Love that.
How about you?
I actually just picked up Yellowface
R.F. Kuang.
Yes. So I think that's going to be like my family's book club next read. And one of my cousins was reading it and wants to talk about it. So she had suggested that one. And typically we're on the same page with books that we like.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested.
There's a lot of discourse about Yellowface.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested, and it's outside of the realm of what we read for here, 100%.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's a different, I don't know, different than the usual, but I'm excited to start it. I'm glad to have some time to kind of sit back and dig into that one.
Love it.
Well, if you're still here, we appreciate you. Thank you for taking the time to listen. And if you like what you heard, don't forget to like, follow, subscribe. Tell your friends, leave comments on our social medias. We're also on YouTube, so you can watch some of these episodes. If you are a listener, we have videos of our episodes up on YouTube as well. But with that,
we're at our wit's end.
We'll see you next time.
Was that as good for you as it was for me? You have been listening to the What in the Smut Podcast with Al.